edition of The People's Show, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Soar free. What are you waiting for? Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. Be part of the show into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you. In Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. I'm Bic, Victor, Dom behind the glass, running the show today. How you guys feeling back there? Are we all collectively nervous?
You did good today. You did real good today.
What do you mean?
The guests.
Oh, it's not I did good. We did good.
I know. Team
effort. Boom, boom, boom. Team efforts right here. Right?
No, you deserve your flowers.
This is collective team efforts. Like Cam Barra putting in work, Jamie Dodd carrying the mail today, solo a bit, and then Reach jumping in. Reach at 11 o'clock? I didn't even realize Reach wakes up that early.
That's true.
Jumps down from the bunk bed and he just.
You are the 650 glue guy, eh?
I used to be. I don't know. Someone else has got to take that mantle. I've shied away from that.
You're still here.
No, I know, but like I used to work longer hours. That's the thing.
You know, now you have a one-hour show.
Exactly. Sometimes I'm like, I'm barely here some days. So just like in, out, show up at 2:48. And
mentally and physically.
Real talk. But this is the time of year. Everyone's got to band together. Certainly the marching orders for the Vancouver Canucks right now after the news today and already texts coming in. How long is Demko out? Emojis with a skull and crying faces already coming in right now. The Canucks are going to have to rally. Casey DeSmith starting tonight. Thatcher Demko questionable for the rest of the series. Corbett's talking, texting in 650-650. Please, no more Demko talk. I got bad news for you. We're talking Thatcher Demko. We're talking Casey DeSmith. Actually, we'll talk specifically Casey DeSmith with someone who's been through this, entering a series mid-series. Taken over for injuries and benchings and all that sort of stuff. Alex Auld will make his return to Sportsnet 650 Airwaves in the second half of the show. But let's start with Yannick Hansen. He joins us every Tuesday and Fridays on Canucks Central. You'll also hear him later today as well on the pregame show with Sat and Dan, longtime NHLer, former Vancouver Canuck. He's Yannick Hansen. Yannick, he is a presentation as well, by the way, of Magnuson Auto Group. Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, Magnuson Ford, and Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Yannick, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. I guess we'll start with the breaking news. I do want to get some impressions on game one from you. But Thatcher Demko out for today, questionable for the rest of the series. And in comes Casey DeSmith. What was your reaction to the news?
Yeah, I've been receiving a couple of texts on that today and through the day. And then my initial thought is, if you need Demko to beat Nashville, we're in bigger trouble than Seoul. So hopefully they can be better than Nashville from a team perspective, get by there, and then when they legitimately would need him come second round, then he's ready. Like I said, I don't want to be relying on Demko to beat a Nashville team. I think they showed that they are a better team. They can take over games. They can control play. Of course, you'd like your strongest lineup at any time. But again, if you need Demko to be bubble Demko in order to beat Nashville, it's a different conversation.
So those texts you were getting, were any of them about the injury news? Do you have any details?
Yeah, that is the injury. The worrisome there, like what's going to happen now, and are they going to be able to be all right, and all these things. And it's one game. But again, there was enough in that game that showed that Vancouver is a better team. Nashville do need to go above and beyond in order to come through this series. So again, can they control play, keep producing scoring chances? They should be fine with DeSmith or whoever the other goalie will be thrown in there. Again, like I said, you would prefer Demko in there. We saw what he did. He's making huge saves at key points. But again, now it's up to the team to to protect and insulate the goalie a little bit and making sure we're not giving up these backdoor plays that Demmer has a way of bailing them out of, and then making sure that, hey, if Nashville needs to score a goal, then they need to really earn it.
All right, so game one, they come from behind, and you hear the atmosphere. Actually, let's start with the atmosphere. You've gone through that whole pageant of hearing the song and what it feels like, and many players were mentioning just how emotional they were getting. You've experienced it. What's it like, and what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's hard to describe. You want to bottle it up and keep it in your fridge and then drink it whenever you feel like it. It's fantastic. It gives you chills every single time, even seeing it, hearing it, thinking of it. It's that feeling, the towels, the building looks so much different. And it looks different from when you show up in the morning when the towels are being put. The red color from the seats is getting blended by the white, and then it's unreal. It's amazing, and you cannot get enough of it. And as soon as it's you have finished the game, you're like, wait, okay, when the next one coming here? Because we want to go take your lap or two and just before the anthem there, when everything is kind of coming together, it touches you in a special place, that's for sure.
The energy was really great, and even earlier with Demko, he makes this big early save, and you talked about as well, getting the crowd behind you early into the game, and there's that big moment. The Canucks win the first one, and it felt like everything kind of settled after that. Obviously, the goal goes against them, but they eventually find their footing throughout the course of that game.
Yeah, it was in that sense, it was good to see them respond, because up until 50 minutes, this game is played in Nashville's premises. They're not in control, but they got the lead. What you want in a game one on the road, try to pull the crowd out, and you get something. You get a lot of times in the playoff, a point shot through traffic, a little bit of tipping maybe, and it goes in, and the building just explodes. And then you can see it the next shift. It's just forechecking, getting pucks back into the front of the net, and it's almost like you can't do anything wrong. And all of a sudden you turned, oh no, what's going to happen, to hey, we got this under control, and we're going to take care of business now.
So after the show, or after the game on the post-game show and yesterday, I was talking about Dakota Joshua. And, for me, these last, with his absence, and he comes back and he starts scoring goals, this last little stretch here, I've kind of taken the tone that, for me, he's the number one priority as far as unrestricted free agents. Because it feels like Lindholm you're going to get priced out of, and the market might be too big, and some of the other guys maybe lower priority. It's really just between Joshua and Bluger. And we've sat here for years talking about guys that have all the tools, like a Myers or a Vertan, whatever it is. Just guys that have all the tools, and you give them chances. I look at Dakota Joshua, and I see a guy with hands. He has good speed, obviously great size, is willing to be physical with that size, and scores goals, is on the penalty kill. To me, I feel like he's got all these tools, and yet it doesn't feel like the urgency at times from the fan base or the willingness to buy into Dakota Joshua long term has been extended just yet. What am I missing here?
Yeah, you're the first thing you touched on. He might be pricing himself out of Vancouver as well with the way he's playing right now. The sample size on him is a little bit too short for me too. Like I said, if he had another year and he did this another year, I'd be holy. This is you got a power forward right here. But again, it's been 5 months right now where he's really, really excelled and come into his own. But the problem is he's looking at a significant raise. And he keeps doing what he's doing right now in the playoff too. That thing will only become bigger, and that's the problem. Again, I love just about everything he brings, because he has that intangibles that none of the other forwards. JT Miller has a little bit of it too, but outside of those two, those are the ones where you can rely on the physicalness. They will mix it up, but again, when Joshua comes in, you're a little bit worried about getting hit by him, because he's 6'3", 6'4", 215, 220. It's it hurts. it's different getting hit by these guys that can move a little bit. So he has something where he doesn't necessarily have to score or produce in order to be effective. No, he can be effective by just running somebody through the end boards, dropping his gloves if he needs to, because again, size is intimidating and it makes guys around him feel a little bit safer, a little bit bigger, a little bit tougher, because there is a little bit of backup here that we can rely upon if things go south. So yeah, like I said, I like just about everything he brings as well, and it'll come down to cost, obviously, but like you mentioned, he would be the number one looking priority to get signed. Obviously Lindholm is gonna be expensive, and barring some phenomenal turnaround here, I can't see them extending him either. So again, he would be the first option to bring back. There's no question about that.
Because what gives me a bit of safety about it is that there is a defensive element to it, right? He's turned himself into not just a guy you can put on the PK, like a credible, if he's part of the first group, you feel okay about it. Where some of the other guys around the league that we talk about, like, oh, he's got all these flashy tools. Can he put it to become like a 30 goal scorer? And it's like, you see that story across the league that guys just don't do it. The fact that he has a defensive element to his game, to me, it makes it, you should prioritize this guy and you should covet that.
Yeah, again, players that don't warrant the top 6 minutes, you have to find another role other than just being on the ice 5-on-5, finishing your checks, producing a little bit. You got to find a way to creep into the penalty minutes. Otherwise, you aren't effective and you get left behind on the bench a little bit. So seeing him taking some responsibility there, getting the opportunity and excelling is obviously a big thing as well. But it means you have a well-rounded player. And players that play good penalty kill tend to be good in their own end as well, 5-on-5, which means you can play them in a check and roll as well. So now all of a sudden you have a borderline complete player here. So again, like you said, there's a lot of positives with him. He's got a lot of things going right for him as well. It will come down to nickel and dimes at one point and seeing if it makes sense for Vancouver to do.
You talked about Lindholm as well, and you and I spoke at great length, you know, leading up to the deadline from December to January about, hey, maybe a winger is the guy that they go out and acquire, someone a natural goal scorer next to Elias Pettersson. They choose Lindholm and had middling results throughout the course of the regular season. Game one, that was a fantastic impression of the design of what he can do.
Yeah, again, that goal was, I think he needed it more than Vancouver needed that goal to get back in there. Again, he's got the track record. He's proven he can do a lot of things. He can be very effective. He's got that borderline Selke nod to him. He's proven he can produce in the right setting. You're just wishing that he'd put it together here in Vancouver for a run again, because he could be one of those guys that'll push the team over the edge in a tight series, because like you said, he has not been as noticeable as you probably would have expected or hoped. So he will be one of those players you're hoping will take another step here in the playoff and produce some value.
Last one for me, because I know you're coming back later. We'll leave some of the Canucks stuff for the pregame show. Pettersson, there was some commentary like he can be better, and you know, he got a shot off a couple of times, and I think the degree of difficulty that he has to produce in is tougher because he's with Lafferty and Hoglander, and I thought Hoglander showed a lot of nerves in that game. He just ends up playing 10 minutes as well. When you look at Pettersson, did you notice anything missing from his game? Or I thought he had an effective game, you know, controlling play and pushing it out of the zone, but yeah, the offensive ability was maybe lacking. What can develop in his game?
Yeah, he needs his wingers. Again, it's a makeshift line, and that's the issue. And that's what we hope would have been fixed coming into the playoff here. You're hoping that somehow they will find chemistry, connection, and start producing. But he's not going to get anything from any team. Everybody is aware of him, so he's going to get tight checking. There will not be a lot of room. And again, the help that he's needing maybe isn't there in terms of the exposure he's getting. Like, he steps over the ice, you'll see two defensemen like, oh, where's Petey? Where's Petey? And then we'll worry about the other two. Where's Petey? And then, okay, there are the other two. And that's the kind of attention he's getting. And until you can draw some of that attention away from him, he will be tight checked. There's no question about that.
Yannick Hansen joining us. You'll hear the rest of his thoughts as well later today on the pregame show with Satyr Shah and Dan Riccio. All right, let's tour the rest of the divisions here, or the series here. Last night, Vegas, Dallas, is, you know, it feels like this is the big heavyweight one. Two teams that could be cup contenders meeting in round one. Vegas wins 4-3. Actually, before we start, Mark Stone comes back. Do you have a problem with the LTIR stuff?
Oh, I don't know. No, I don't. Used it. They found a way to get in without him playing. You left $10 million on the bench, and you were fighting to get in. You're in a wild card spot against the top team in the West Division. Or in the Western Conference. I don't think you did yourself any favor. I think if they could have had him in and not being in a match out with the best team in the West, if you will, in the first round, they would have done that. So no, I don't have an issue with it. It's the rules that's allowed to do. Again, he had a lacerated spleen. I'm assuming it was actually lacerated. Whether or not they kept him out for another week or two, and then he just he could have come back. So I don't know. But again, like I said, then he hasn't been playing up until he's proven he's able to jump in on a whim and be right up to speed, which is obviously a big thing. He doesn't need a long line of games in order to get himself situated. So that's maybe another factor in them keeping him out as long as they did. So I know I don't have an issue with them using the rules to their advantage.
What did you think about that game, though? You know, Stone gets the early goal, and it felt like it lived up to the billing a little bit of how big boy hockey that series is going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Like I said, it's tough to see one of those two teams being out already. There's other teams I'd rather have out, if you will, and then putting them further down the line. But that's just the way the matchup worked. It's two really deep, well-rounded teams. They're well-coached. They have all the tools you need. They have phenomenal defensemen on both sides. They are strong down the middle. They have size. They have skill. They have speed. They can shut down. Like, it's two complete teams going at it, and it's those series that are fun to watch over others, obviously.
Edmonton gets 7 up on the LA Kings, and McDavid goes for 5 assists. Just a tremendous opening start to Edmonton. And you know, I imagine the reality of what the LA Kings are going through right now, right? They lose to Edmonton 2 years in a row. They make transactions, I imagine, designed to try to build Edmonton. And the first crack they get, it's 7 goals against. How deflating must that be? And do you, you know, maybe have a little bit of sympathy with what the Kings are going through?
That's the fear with Edmonton. Like, you're at the mercy of McDavid. There's no question about that. Obviously, there's other players. Hyman is a good player. Dreisaitl is a phenomenal player. But you are at the mercy of Connor McDavid. If he wants to beat you, he's going to beat you. And he can do it. And there is nobody else in this league. We're going to touch on Toronto in a second. And Austin Matthews had a great game in on all 3 goals. But he does not do what McDavid does. He can win games by himself. By just being who he is and doing what he does. And that's the fear of playing against those type of teams, because you can't go in LA and say, okay, we're gonna change this in our system, we're gonna correct a little bit here, and then we'll be fine. No, you're gonna line up tomorrow when they play again, and you're gonna hope that McDavid doesn't do it to you again. And that's where it is. And yeah, you can say, okay, we took a couple of bad penalties. But he's still going to do what he does 5-on-5. He's still going to find plays, make plays, go end-to-end, set up guys, backdoor tap-ins that you cannot defend against. So you're at the mercy of one player that you cannot protect yourself against. So it's a very, very tough, tall task to do this. And again, the times that Edmonton have been beaten, they've been beaten by their own bad bounces, goaltenders not making the stops that they should be, or they've run into phenomenal, great Stanley Cup teams like Vegas, where they've been so deep on D that they've just been able to come at him, and they still just squeaks it out. So Edmonton is a tough one. It's a unicorn, if you will, in terms of how you would approach a team like that versus the other 15 teams you'd probably roll in against.
What's the gap then between Matthews and McDavid, the reason you say that, why he doesn't take over games?
I don't know. I don't watch Matthews's lot, and I was also asked, like, what's more impressive? Well, one scores almost 70, and the other has 100 helpers. It's like they're so extreme. It's just the way McDavid can do it by himself on his own. Like, for instance, Matthews' winner. It's a series of phenomenal plays by him, jumping in, handing it down behind the D, coming in on a breakaway, absolutely wrecking the goaltender. Like, all these things, but he's getting it at the tail end of the ice. McDavid will pick it up behind his own net, and he will go end-to-end through five guys and score. Like, there's just a little bit of difference. Like, again, Matthews, he's a phenomenal shooter, and a lot of times he's at the receiving end of all these passes. Somebody has to get you the puck in order for this to happen. If this doesn't happen, you're not going to score. McDavid has scored 65 last year. He can do it on his own. This year he decided, no, I'm going to do something four guys before me have done in the history of the NHL. I'm going to put up 100 helpers. And he did that. And again, he bounced three pucks in off of Hyman almost yesterday. And that's one of those things where you can't stop this. You just hope that he doesn't have it that night, and that's enough for you to win the game.
I mean, Matthews was amazing. And I thought even defensively yesterday, really strong. Even at the end of Goldmouth's scramble, there he is tucking the puck between Samsonov to protect that win. And they get their split, and yet it still feels like we keep waiting for, like, I'll pay attention to the Leafs. I'll take them seriously once they get to a certain stage. This run that they've been through, like, what do you think their mentality is right now?
Yeah, I have some, like, the thing that gives me confidence is actually, like, again, I'm not taking anything away from Matthews from what I just ranted about in terms of what he's doing. And what's giving you good vibes from Toronto is how noticeable and visible he's been in the first two games. He's been in and around everything and creating, where in the past when they've been when they've lost out, you've been lacking something from the top guys there, where he's been on for the first two games. He's been involved, he's been producing and generating. So there's a lot of different things surrounding the Leafs this year, I feel like, where in the past it's like, I don't believe in them. This year there seems to be a different drive to them, to him specifically. Obviously Nylander, that hurts tremendously. And whatever happened there, they need him back in a hurry, because he can produce some of that offense that when Matthews and Tavares and Marner, they're short on that area when they aren't doing it. So they really need him back. But again, they're giving off a little bit of a different vibe than they have in the past.
The big one, it felt like the playoffs kind of started slow. You know, Carolina and Boston wins early on that 5-1 game. And then, you know, Tampa, Florida, I thought was not quite the big fireworks show. To me, the playoffs really started once Winnipeg and Colorado played. And then obviously it closed with Vancouver and Nashville. 7-6. And, you know, if you're the Colorado Avalanche right now, are you kind of looking over your shoulder thinking what kind of performance we're going to get from our goalie?
No, if I'm Colorado, I like that one. Like, Winnipeg is very, very good defensively. Have probably the best goalie in the league. We found a way to put six past them. Yeah, we didn't win, but that gives me confidence that we can score, and we can score at will against these guys. So you're still feeling good if you're Colorado after that game. You would obviously love to have had the win after being up a couple of times. But again, you're by no means are you looking at this as an insurmountable mountain to climb back on. You're a proven winner. You have the best player in the series on your team in that game as well. So probably the best two players in the series. So you have a lot of things going for you. Again, you've got to go out and win game two. Nobody likes going down 2-0 and trying to come back from that. That being said, we always say until you lose at home, you're not in any real trouble, and they haven't. So again, there's a lot of like from Colorado as well.
Actually, before we let you go, I do want to cycle back to the Demko thing and a backup coming into a game. You would have played in the Danny Sabourin game. We remember how it ended with you involved there with Niedermeyer, but what do you remember? I'm not sure we've ever asked you about that 3 minutes and 34 seconds. What was that like for you on the bench?
Why did you have to bring it up that it was my fault?
No. I just, you were involved in the end of game sequence, but just in general, for the skaters, what was that like?
It was surreal. Like, I couldn't believe it when we were about 15 seconds away from having to go out and start the period, lose all dresses. Like, I can't. I gotta go. It was like, no, you can't. The game starts in a minute. It was like, it was so surreal, and the only one that was more flustered or what do you say, scared for this than Lou was Danny Sabourin, because he had to go in now, and we were hemmed in like for the entire time he was there, getting peppered with shots. Remember Lou coming back on the bench, and we can't get a whistle, so Lou can't even go back on the ice. But again, it was so surreal. Anaheim bench just like shoot, just trying to get something by Danny before we can get a chance to get Lou back in there. And thankfully, it was Lou in net when we lost that game, because it would have been heartbreaking had it happened while Danny was in net.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, we'll see what happens tonight, and looking forward to hearing you as well in a bit on the pregame show at 6:30. Yannick, thanks as always.
Yeah, take care.
So Yannick Hansen joins us every Tuesday here on The People Show, brought to you by Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Fort, Port Coquitlam, Magnuson, Ford, and Abbotsford, on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. I wasn't trying to throw him under the bus. I was just trying to make everybody remember what happened at the end of the game and just know what game we're talking about here. Dom was looking at me behind the glass, shaking his head. It's like, what are you doing, Nizar?
Yannick, remember that time you screwed up at the end of the game and Scott Niedermeyer headshotted you?
Look, man, sometimes you got to bring up the tough moments, all right? You can't want me to ask a tough question sometimes and not bring up some tough moments as well. I didn't try to throw him under the bus. I don't know, you didn't try.
It's just how it came across.
All right. On the other side, I got to run to break anyways. Alex Auld going to join us. Speaking of tough moments, I ruined Aldi's day, actually, getting him on the show.
You're good at this.
Yeah. Not because I wanted to get him on the show. His day wasn't ruined like that. I'm sure we'll get into it. It's all coming up here on The People Show, Sportsnet 650.